It's Monday, November 20th, and this is the fourth session of this study on the kingdom of God. And there'll be a lot of story time tonight. My wife says she loves it when there's story time. And to really understand things in the Word, you just have to read a lot of it pertaining to the topic that you're after. And last week, we saw that there was a king in Israel. He wasn't over all of Israel, just one city called Shechem. His name was Abimelech, but he was a self-appointed king. He wasn't chosen by God, and he didn't do anything according to the will of God. The first thing he did is he murdered his 70 brothers, and it went downhill from there. His kingdom only lasted 3 years. And after that, the judges continued to rule over Israel, and the judges were men that God would raise up, put his spirit upon them, give them instructions, and they would rescue the people of Israel out of the messes that they had gotten themselves into. And it happened repeatedly that the people, you know, they'd worship God for a time, and then they would start looking at the things that the people around them that were still in the land were doing, check out their worship, and they would worship other gods. And it would always, always get them in trouble, because God told them under the law that if you abandon me and my word and you start worshiping other gods, bad things are going to happen. You'll have poverty, you'll have disease, you'll have defeat before your enemies, and these things always happen. And God had to make sure that it did, because he had to be faithful to his word. And while they're worshiping other gods, he can't even answer their prayers because they're not praying to him, right? They're praying to somebody else who can't help them at all. But he would always, at some point, just have pity on them and be merciful and find one person that he could work with, that he'd put a spirit on, that would listen to him. People like Gideon and Samson and Jephthah and Deborah. There were a number of them, but they went through this cycle over and over again. But during that time, they didn't have a king. They did consider God to be their king, as we saw when we looked at this last week. And Samuel was the last of the judges. When he was judged, the people demanded a king at that time. And he went to God and he said, no, the people want a king. And God said, well, that's what we'll do then. We'll provide a king for them. Now you tell him what's going to happen, how the king is going to take the best people for his own servants and the best men for the soldiers in his army. And he's going to make them pay extra money to support the kingdom. And Samuel told them all that stuff. They said, yeah, but we want a king like all the other countries around us. They have kings that fight their battles for them. So he chose a young man named Saul. And Saul didn't really want to be king. He was just out looking for his father's lost donkeys. And he happened upon the place where Samuel happened to be. But God told Samuel, I've selected a king from among the people, and I will point him out to you tomorrow. And it was the next day that Samuel met Saul, and God said in Samuel's ear, this is the one that I was telling you about. Anoint him to be king. And we read some of this together, but I want to read some of the parts that we didn't look at last week. So we saw that Samuel anointed Saul. He anointed him with oil. And I want to read in 1 Samuel chapter 10, verses 1 to 16. It says, then Samuel took a vial of oil and poured it upon his head and kissed him and said, is it not because the Lord hath anointed thee to be captain over his inheritance? And by captain, he meant king. When thou art departed from me today, he's saying to Saul, then thou shalt find two men by Rachel's sepulcher in the border of Benjamin at Zelzah, and they will say unto thee, the asses which thou wentest to seek are found. And lo, thy father hath left the care of the asses and sorroweth for you, saying, what shall I do for my son? Thou shalt go on forward from thence, and thou shalt come to the plain of Tabor, and there shall meet thee three men going up to God to Bethel, one carrying three kids, another carrying three loaves of bread, and another carrying a bottle of wine. And they will salute thee and give thee two loaves of bread, which thou shalt receive of their hands. Very specific word of knowledge here and some word of wisdom. After that, thou shalt come to the hill of God, where is the garrison of the Philistines, their encampment, their army base. And it shall come to pass, when thou art come thither to the city, that thou shalt meet a company of prophets coming down from the high place with a psaltery and a tabret and a pipe and a harp before them, and they shall prophesy. And the Spirit of the Lord will come upon thee, Saul, and thou shalt prophesy with them. And look at this, and shalt be turned into another man. Say, this is going to change you, having the Spirit of God upon you. Verse 7, and let it be when these signs are come unto thee, that thou do as occasion serve thee, for God is with thee. So once you have the Spirit of God on you, whatever comes up, God will help you with it, because he can talk to you by way of that Spirit. Verse 8, and thou shalt go down before me to Gilgal. And behold, I will come down unto thee to offer burnt offerings and to sacrifice sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days shalt thou tarry till I come to thee and show thee what thou shalt do. Remember this, it will come up in a future incident. Okay? Wait 7 days. I will offer sacrifices. I will tell you what to do. Verse 9, and it was so that when he had turned his back to go from Samuel, God gave him another heart, and all those signs came to pass that day. So how could God give him another heart? Well, part of it is what Samuel told him, okay? The things that Samuel told him, and then the Spirit of God will come upon him so that God can give him more information and instructions. He will be different after this, but we will see that it will not necessarily change him completely, but we'll read on and I'll tell you why. So God gave him another heart. All those signs came to pass that day. And when they were come thither to the hill, behold, a company of prophets met him, and the Spirit of God came upon him, and he prophesied among them. And it came to pass that when all that knew him before time saw that, behold, he prophesied among the prophets, then the people said one to another, what is this that has come unto the son of Kish? Is Saul also among the prophets? They noticed the big difference in him. And one of the same place answered and said, but who is their father? Therefore it became a proverb, is Saul also among the prophets? I guess it was a saying that people would say at the time. And when he had made an end of prophesying, he came to the high place. And Saul's uncle said unto him and to his servant, whither went ye? Where did you go? And he said, to seek the asses. And when he saw that they were nowhere, we came to Samuel. And Saul's uncle said, tell me, I pray thee, what Samuel said unto you. And Saul said unto his uncle, he told us plainly that the asses were found. But of the matter of the kingdom whereof Samuel spake, he told him not. That was really the big deal, wasn't it? You're going to be the king. He anointed him with oil, and he didn't tell his uncle any of that stuff. Seems like he's a little unsure of the whole thing. Now, we're going to skip down to verse 26, because last week we read about how Samuel called a big meeting of all the people of Israel to come to the place to announce the new king. And when they did, there was a big drum roll and then nothing, because Saul had hid himself among the stuff. And they said, well, what should we do now? Should we go on with the ceremony? And God told Samuel, he hid himself among the stuff. Go, you'll find him there. And they brought Saul in front of the people. And Samuel said, behold, your king. And they all saw that he was a handsome man and a whole lot taller than everybody else in the whole nation. That was apparently a big deal, that he was really tall. So afterwards, everybody went home. They announced that he was the king, and everybody went home. And verse 26 says, and Saul also went home to Gibeah, where he was from, and there went with him a band of men whose hearts God had touched. And that was a great thing that God did for him, to have a band of men that would go with him and support him. And these were men whose hearts God had touched. But, look at verse 27, but the children of Belial said, how shall this man save us? And they despised him and brought him no presents, but he held his peace. So there was a group of men that said, how's this man going to save us? Well, they should have known that God had chosen him, okay? Samuel had announced it to everybody that this was the man that God had chosen to be king, but these children of Belial or Belial said, how's he going to save us? And they despised him. Now, I want to take a little side route to look at what it means by children of Belial or Belial. I think Belial is the correct way to pronounce it. And the word Belial means worthlessness. And there's a few sub-definitions: worthless, good for nothing, unprofitable, base fellow, wicked, or ruin or destruction. So a child of Belial would be a child of destruction, be someone who is wicked, someone who is worthless, good for nothing. But it's not just that he doesn't do any good, it's that he does evil. He does things that are destructive to other people. Now, the term comes up in chapter 1 of Samuel, 1 Samuel, in verse 16. And this is when Hannah, who would be Samuel's mother, she was in a situation where she couldn't have any children, and she prayed to God in her sorrow that God would grant her a child. And she's in the tabernacle, and she's praying to God and moving her lips, but no words coming out. And Eli, the high priest, thought she was drunk, looked at her and said, put your strong drink away from you. And she answered and said this, verse 16. She said to Eli, count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial, for out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. So Eli had falsely judged her, but she said, don't think of me as a daughter of Belial, someone that would do something wrong, like be drunk in the tabernacle of God like that. But if you go to chapter 2, we'll see that Eli's own two sons were identified as children of Belial. So go to chapter 2, verse 12 says, now the sons of Eli were sons of Belial. They knew not the Lord. So these are the priests. They're sons of the high priest. When Eli would die, one of these would take over to be the high priest. And both of them were sons of Belial, sons of wickedness, worthless. And they knew not the Lord. And just to read about some of the things that they did, when people would come to offer their sacrifices, these two guys, Hophni and Phinehas, they didn't do it according to the way it was written, but they did it according to the way they wanted it, because they were supposed to burn the fat on the altar and then take a portion for the priests. And they said, no, just give it to us raw. So the people with the sacrifice said, no, you're supposed to do it this way. It's written in the word. And they said, give it to us or we'll take it by force. So they bullied the people. And the result of that, in verse 17, says, wherefore the sin of the young men was very great before the Lord, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. Can you imagine that? To make an offering to God was supposed to be a joyful thing that was done voluntarily with pleasure. And they were making it so that people hated to bring an offering to God because of these two guys. So their actions, they were doing what pleased themselves, but the result of their actions is it hurt other people. That's the destructive aspect of this. And then reading verse 22, it says, now Eli was very old and heard all that his sons did unto all Israel, and how they lay with the women that assembled at the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. So women would come to the tabernacle, and they'd pull them aside and have sex with them. And he said unto them, why do ye such things? For I hear of your evil dealings by all this people. I mean, everybody's complaining to me about you two. Nay, my sons, for it is no good report that I hear. You make the Lord's people to transgress. If one man sin against another, the judge shall judge him. But if a man sin against the Lord, who shall entreat for him? Notwithstanding, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because the Lord would slay them. And I believe this should read, they hearken not unto the voice of their father, because of this the Lord would slay them. Okay? So their behavior was destructive. And that's one of the characteristics of these children of Belial. In Deuteronomy 13, it's mentioned in the law what's to be done to people who are children of Belial. And this has to do with those that would encourage others to walk away from God and to serve other false gods. First, it has to do with just individuals, and then it has to do with groups of men that would do this. So I want to look at it starting in verse 6. It says, "If thy brother, the son of thy mother, or thy son, or thy daughter, or thy wife of thy bosom, or thy friend, which is as thine own soul, entice thee secretly, saying, let us go and serve other gods, which thou hast not known, thou nor thy fathers, namely the gods of the people which are round about you, nigh unto thee, or far off from thee, from one end of the earth even unto the other end of the earth, thou shalt not consent unto him, nor hearken unto him, neither shall thine eye pity him, neither shalt thou spare, neither shalt thou conceal him. But thou shalt surely kill him. Thine hand shall be first upon him to put him to death, and afterwards the hand of all the people. And thou shalt stone him with stones that he die, because he hath sought to thrust thee away from the Lord thy God, which brought thee out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage." Again, this is under the law, and this is to Israel. So if there were a person who was an Israelite, who not only secretly worshipped other gods, but tried to get somebody else to do so, they were to be put to death. It was not to be tolerated. Now, let's read on. Verse 11, "And all Israel shall hear and fear, and shall do no more any such wickedness as this is among you. If thou shalt hear say in one of thy cities, which the Lord thy God hath given thee to dwell there, saying, certain men, children of Belial, are gone out from among you, and have withdrawn the inhabitants of their city, saying, let us go and serve other gods, which ye have not known. Then shalt thou inquire and make search and ask diligently, and behold, if it be truth, and the thing certain that such abomination is wrought among you, thou shalt surely smite the inhabitants of that city with the edge of the sword, destroying it utterly, and all that is therein, and the cattle thereof, with the edge of the sword. And thou shalt gather all the spoil of it into the midst of the street thereof, and shall burn with fire the city, and all the spoil thereof, every whit, for the Lord thy God, and it shall be in heap forever, it shall not be built again." So this is something, I don't know if it was ever enforced in Israel, but this is something that they were supposed to do. It was not to be tolerated that one would try to turn another fellow Israelite from serving the true God to serving false gods. It was not to be tolerated. And it would be children of Belial that would entice an entire city to worship other gods. And if that were the case, then the entire city would be destroyed because they hadn't dealt with the individuals as they should have. They're going along with them. So these children of Belial, it's just not that they're not doing anything good. They're doing things that cause big problems for other people. You know, to turn people away from God is, in God's opinion, that would be the worst thing that a person could do. To convince someone else not to believe in him, not to serve him, not to worship him, but to go after other gods. There's other things about the children of Belial in other records and in Proverbs. They're called wicked men, naughty, evil, are the different ways that the word Belial is translated. Once it refers to an evil disease, and the word evil is the word Belial. So a disease that would be in a person's body that would kill the whole body. So this does have a bearing on the kingdom of God. When you consider children of Belial, these are men under the influence of the devil. They're ungodly men that have no interest in doing the will of God. So for the will of God to be done on earth to them would be something that they would not want. They don't want to do the will of God themselves, and they don't want other people doing the will of God, you see? What they're doing is the will of the adversary. Whether it's intentional or not, they're still doing the will of the devil. And that's what's going on with these men. Now, back to Samuel and Saul. So, 1 Samuel chapter 11. Going to see Saul's first definitive action as king of Israel. Because after the big meeting where they announced that he was king, everybody went home, including Saul. He didn't start setting up his kingdom yet. He went back home to his dad's farm. But this happened here, chapter 11, verse 1. Then Nahash the Ammonite came up. The Ammonites were descendants of Lot, but at different times they attacked the people of Israel. They didn't respect the relationship that they had back hundreds of years prior to this. So Nahash the Ammonite came up and encamped against Jabesh Gilead, which is in Israel. And all the men of Jabesh said unto Nahash, make a covenant with us and we will serve thee. Don't kill us. Let's make an agreement. We'll be your slaves. And Nahash the Ammonite answered them, on this condition will I make a covenant with you, that I may thrust out all your right eyes and lay it for a reproach upon all Israel. So if you will agree to this, I poke out all of your right eyes, and it will be a reproach upon the whole nation of Israel that you let me do this. And the elders of Jabesh said unto him, give us 7 days respite, that we may send messengers unto all the coasts of Israel. And then if there be no man to save us, we will come out to thee. Then came the messengers to Gibeah of Saul, and told the tidings in the ears of the people. And all the people lifted up their voices and wept. Like, oh, what are we going to do? It's going to be such a shame for this to happen. And behold, Saul came after the herd out of the field. Why? He's working on his dad's farm still. And Saul said, what aileth the people that they weep? And they told him the tidings of the men of Jabesh. And the Spirit of God came upon Saul when he heard those tidings, and his anger was kindled greatly. Now, the Spirit of God had already come upon him when he prophesied with the prophets, right? So this means that God is working in him now. He's giving him information and instructions, and God is urging him to action. So his anger was kindled greatly, and he took a yoke of oxen and hewed them in pieces and sent them throughout all the coasts of Israel by the hands of messengers, saying, whosoever cometh not forth after Saul and after Samuel, so shall it be done unto his oxen. And the fear of the Lord fell on the people, and they came out with one consent. So his bold action that was prompted by God brought a unanimous response from all the people of Israel. So for the first time, he's acting like a king. He had been announced as king, but what's he doing? He's working on his dad's farm, plowing the fields with the oxen. But now he's rallying the people together, prompted by the Spirit of God coming upon him. Verse 8, and when he numbered them in Bezek, the children of Israel were 300,000. It's a pretty good size army. And the men of Judah, 30,000. So 330,000. For some reason, they separated out the tribe of Judah from the rest of the tribes of Israel when they counted them. And they said unto the messengers that came, thus shall ye say unto the men of Jabesh Gilead, tomorrow, by that time the sun be hot, ye shall have help. And the messengers came and showed it to the men of Jabesh, and they were glad. Say, okay, we don't have to go out and buy eye patches for all of us. Therefore the men of Jabesh said, tomorrow we will come out unto you, and ye shall do with us all that seemeth good unto you. Guess they said that to Nahash the Ammonite, because they knew that they would be getting help. And it was so on the morrow that Saul put the people in three companies, and they came into the midst of the host in the morning watch, and slew the Ammonites until the heat of the day. And it came to pass that they which remained of the Ammonites were scattered, so that two of them were not left together. So they wiped them out, dismantled their army. Those that ran away alone. And the people said unto Samuel, who is he that said, shall Saul reign over us? Bring the men that we may put them to death. They didn't say that before. When the children of Belial spoke up against Saul, nobody did anything about it, because I think the rest of the nation wasn't so sure about him either. He had been announced as their king, but he hadn't done anything yet. Now that he's done something and had a military victory, everybody's on his side. Get those men that spoke against Saul and let's put them to death. And Saul said, no, there shall not a man be put to death this day, for today the Lord hath wrought salvation in Israel. So he didn't get rid of those bad guys. Then said Samuel to the people, come and let us go to Gilgal and renew the kingdom there. So let's make it official. And all the people went to Gilgal, and there they made Saul king before the Lord in Gilgal. And there they sacrificed sacrifices of peace offerings before the Lord. And there Saul and all the men of Israel rejoiced greatly. So Saul is now officially king, and he's reigning. And Samuel has words with the people, which we looked at last time, so I'm not going to read it all again. But he cautioned them, saying, you have a king now, but make sure that you do the will of God. Make sure that you obey the law of God and the commandment, because if not, both you and your king are going to be consumed or destroyed. Now let's go to chapter 13 and see how Saul does after this. 13:1, Saul reigned 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose some 3,000 men of Israel, whereof 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. Jonathan was Saul's son. And the rest of the people he sent every man to his tent. And Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it. And Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, let the Hebrews hear. And all Israel heard that Saul had smitten a garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel also has had an abomination with the Philistines, and the people were called together after Saul to Gilgal. Now, notice this. It was Jonathan that smote the garrison of the Philistines, but Saul took credit for it, right? Because all the people heard that Saul had smitten a garrison of the Philistines. His son had done it, but he took credit for it. Verse 5, and the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel. 30,000 chariots, 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash eastward from Bethaven. So Saul is tremendously outnumbered here. Verse 6, when the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were distressed, then the people did hide themselves in caves and in thickets and in rocks and in high places and in pits. And some of the Hebrews went over Jordan to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal, and all the people followed him trembling. And he tarried 7 days according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. Remember, Samuel had told him, you wait for me 7 days in Gilgal, I will do sacrifices, peace offerings, and thank offerings, and I will tell you what to do. So he waited 7 days, but Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. So of his 2,000 men, they were starting to leave. And Saul said in verse 9, bring hither a burnt offering to me and peace offerings. And he offered the burnt offering. Now, what's the problem here? He's not a priest. He's king, but a king is not authorized by God to offer burnt offerings. They go to the priest. And Samuel is the acting priest at the time. Samuel had the authority to do that, and Samuel told him to wait 7 days and that Samuel would offer the offerings. But Saul took it into his own hands. And it came to pass, verse 10, that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offering, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. And Samuel said, what hast thou done? And Saul said, well, because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash, therefore said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering. So he explained why he did what he did, really because he was afraid. He was afraid of what might happen. So he went and did something that he was not, under the law, authorized to do. And Samuel had given him instructions and told him to wait, and that Samuel would offer the offerings, and Samuel would tell him what to do. So he disobeyed that. Verse 13, Samuel said to Saul, thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which he commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. Why is this so important? God had chosen him to be king over God's people. Similar to God put Adam in charge, gave him dominion over everything God had made upon the earth. But Adam disobeyed God, and that ruined everything and put everything in the hand of God's adversary. Samuel told Saul, you've done foolishly. If you had obeyed, everything would have been okay. And the kingdom would have continued with you and your family forever. God would have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now, verse 14, thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, And the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee. The main thing that the king was to do would be to obey what God told him to do. The king is to lead the people in obedience to God. That's his main thing. The king might have other ideas. And if he does, he's not fit to be the king over God's people. And Samuel told Saul just that. Verse 15, and Samuel arose and gat him up from Gilgal unto Gibeah of Benjamin, and Saul numbered the people that were present with him, about 600 men. Now, in chapter 15, and this may be a number of years later, but Samuel, at God's direction, gives Saul another opportunity to obey a direct order. So in verse 1, Samuel also said unto Saul, the Lord sent me to anoint thee to be king over his people, over Israel. Remember? Now therefore, hearken unto the voice of the words of the Lord. Listen to what I tell you. Thus saith the Lord of hosts, I remember that which Amalek did to Israel, how he laid in wait for him in the way when he came up from Egypt. You can read about that in Exodus. The Amalekites, they attacked him when they were in a weakened position after being without water for a few days. And God made a declaration that God would always have war with Amalek through the ages until they were completely wiped out. Verse 3 says, now go and smite Amalek. So this is Samuel telling Saul, now go and smite Amalek and utterly destroy all that they have and spare them not, but slay both man and woman, infant and suckling, ox and sheep, camel and ass. Very specific instructions. Might be a hard thing to do, but that's what God told him to do. And it might sound like something wrong to the human ear, but God knew what he was doing. And whatever God says to do is the right thing to do, because God's the judge of what's right, you see? And Saul gathered the people together and numbered them in Telaim, 200,000 footmen and 10,000 men of Judah. And Saul came to a city of Amalek and laid wait in the valley. And Saul said unto the Kenites, go, depart, get you down from among the Amalekites, lest I destroy you with them. For you showed kindness to all the children of Israel when they came up out of Egypt. So the Kenites departed from among the Amalekites. That was fine. And Saul smote the Amalekites from Havilah until thou comest to Shur, that is over against Egypt. And he took Agag, the king of the Amalekites, alive, and utterly destroyed all the people with the edge of the sword. But Saul and the people spared Agag and the best of the sheep and of the oxen and of the fatlings and the lambs and all that was good, and would not utterly destroy them, but everything that was vile and refuse, that they utterly destroyed. Then came the word of the Lord unto Samuel, saying, it repenteth me that I have set up Saul to be king, for he has turned back from following me and hath not performed my commandments. And it grieved Samuel, and he cried unto the Lord all night. Because Samuel really did love Saul, and he was the one that anointed him king, and he wanted him to do well. And it was a great grief to him. And when Samuel rose early to meet Saul in the morning, it was told Samuel, saying, Saul came to Carmel, and behold, he set him up a place, and has gone about, and passed on, and gone down to Gilgal. And Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, blessed be thou of the Lord, I have performed the commandment of the Lord. And Samuel said, well, what meaneth this bleating of the sheep in mine ears, and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? What's all the barnyard animal noises going on there? And Saul said, oh, they have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and of the oxen to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. Then Samuel said unto Saul, stay, and I will tell thee what the Lord hath said to me this night. And he said unto him, okay, say on. And Samuel said, when thou wast little in thine own sight, wast thou not made the head of the tribes of Israel? And the Lord anointed thee king over Israel. And the Lord sent thee on a journey and said, go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they be consumed. Wherefore then didst thou not obey the voice of the Lord, but didst fly upon the spoil, and didst evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said unto Samuel, oh, yea, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord, gone the way which the Lord sent me, and have brought Agag the king of Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the spoil, sheep and oxen, the chief of the things which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God in Gilgal. So they're all going to be dead anyway, eventually, you know. And Samuel said, hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken is better than the fat of rams. For rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. Children are like that sometimes. You tell them to do something, and instead of doing what you told them to do, they do something else that they're really proud of, and they want to show you the great thing that they did. And you say, well, that's really nice, but I told you to do this thing, which you didn't do, so you really didn't obey me, did you? We had that with our kids sometimes. But it's a matter of obedience. And Saul did not obey the instructions. Remember, if God tells you to do something, whether he tells you directly or by way of someone else like a prophet of God, then it's important to do exactly what God says, where he says to do it, when he says to do it, in the way that he says to do it, and to do it completely. And this is the second time that Saul felt short of carrying out specific direct orders from God given by a prophet. In fact, the prophet that anointed him to be king. So Saul failed. I mean, he might think he's a great leader. He might think that he's doing well. But if he's not obeying God, then the will of God is not being done upon the earth as it is in heaven. And that's what God wanted regarding a kingdom. So verse 24, Saul said unto Samuel, I have sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and thy words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. So he admitted that he had done what was wrong. Out of fear of the people, he transgressed the commandment of God, which was the greater thing. Now, therefore, I pray thee, pardon my sin, and turn again with me, that I may worship the Lord. And Samuel said unto Saul, I will not return with thee, for thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, the most important thing. And the Lord hath rejected thee from being king over Israel. And as Samuel turned about to go away, he, or Saul, laid hold upon the skirt of his mantle, and it rent, it tore. So Samuel turned away, Saul grabbed the skirt of his mantle, and it ripped. And Samuel said unto him, the Lord hath rent, or ripped, the kingdom of Israel from thee this day, and hath given it to a neighbor of thine that is better than thou. Also the strength of Israel will not lie nor repent, for he is not a man that he should repent. Then he said, I have sinned, yet honor me now, I pray thee, before the elders of my people and before Israel, and turn again with me, that I may worship the Lord thy God. What was most important to him? That he got the honor of the people. He was loving it at that point and didn't want to do without that. So Samuel turned again after Saul, and Saul worshiped the Lord. Then said Samuel, bring hither to me Agag, the king of the Amalekites. And Agag came unto him delicately. Agag said, surely the bitterness of death is past. I know you killed all my people. I forgive you. And Samuel said, as thy sword hath made women childless, so shall thy mother be childless among women. And Samuel hewed Agag in pieces before the Lord in Gilgal. Then Samuel went to Ramah, and Saul went up to his house to Gibeah of Saul. And Samuel came no more to see Saul until the day of his death. Nevertheless, Samuel mourned for Saul, and the Lord repented that he had made Saul king over Israel. So even though he was chosen, okay, a man can be chosen by God and appointed to do something, even anointed, that doesn't mean the man's going to follow through, okay? The man still has his own free will. And the power of being a king, that can corrupt a person. It can make him do things to keep that power that they shouldn't do. Because what they should do is obey God no matter what. And that's the one thing that Saul failed to do. So we're at the end of our hour this time. So next week, and we will get together next week. Next week, we'll continue with Saul, but we'll also see David being chosen as king. And we'll see a big contrast between Saul and David. But we'll continue with this dramatic series of events that happens in the history of Israel, all along keeping in mind that Jesus Christ said, the kingdom of God is at hand. And the kingdom would come and God's will would be done on earth as it is in heaven. We have a ways to go to get to that point, but we're going to learn a lot along the way. Okay? So that's all for tonight.